I'm Kevin Middleton.
And I'm Samantha Berg. And this is The Bridge to Everywhere. Welcome to The Bridge to Everywhere. Join us as we explore health, community, and culture from a holistic perspective. Health topics addressed on our show are for information and entertainment and should not be taken as medical advice. If you have a medical condition, please consult an appropriate care provider. Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Bridge to Everywhere. Today, we're really excited to have Rachel Bobka on the show, and she's going to be talking about her new business venture called Alaska's Apothecary. So we're going to be talking about a little bit about her story, about how she got interested in starting an apothecary, what actually is an apothecary, some of the reasons for starting an apothecary, and then we'll get into understanding some of the plants that she works with. We'll talk a little bit about plant preparations, and we'll talk about some of the workshops that she's going to be offering in the future, and also where she sees the apothecary going in the future. But before we start, I just want to give you a little bit of a bio on Rachel. So Rachel Bobka first visited Alaska 4 summers ago to go backpacking around the state with her husband and 2 dogs. Like so many others, they loved it so much, they moved up shortly afterwards. Knowing nothing about plants, Rachel was introduced by a good flora-loving friend to Janice Schofield's book, Discovering Wild Plants, and she's been hooked ever since. You can find her in the summer stooping down to get a closer look at the plants, taking their pictures, touching them, smelling them, and tasting them. She wants to share her knowledge of the wild plants that grow here and will be offering weekly wild plant walks as part of her new business venture, Alaska's Apothecary. For a schedule of walks and workshops, you can visit her website at www.akapothecary.com. That's www.akapothecary.com. And she also has a Facebook page for the apothecary, and that is facebook.com/akapothecary. So welcome to the show, Rachel. Great to have you here.
Thank you very much.
So let's get a little bit to start out with about how you got to this place to even be starting an apothecary. Tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah, so I think it's important for people to realize that even if they know nothing about plants right now, if they can't tell the difference between a birch and a cottonwood and an alder, or a spruce and a hemlock and a cedar, that they can still do this. That's where I was 4 years ago when I first moved up here. I didn't know anything about plants, really. And like you said in the introduction, one of my good friends, Kayla, introduced me to Janice Schofield's book, Discovering Wild Plants. And if you're interested in getting into wild plants, I call that the Plant Bible. It is, I'd say, the best book on Alaska's wild plants. It's not your typical field guide that just tells you this part is edible. She actually goes into detail about things that she's tried or that other people have tried. She gives you recipes, native uses, historical uses. It's just a
It's chock full of stuff. I have the book, and I love looking through it, you know, after I've found something when I've been out on a hike, and I can bring it back and I can look, what is this and what do you use it for, and all the different recipes she has. And then she has a shorter book that's more of a field guide that you can actually stick in your backpack. Like, yeah. I don't know that if I was going to go on a long hike that I would stick this book in my backpack.
It's pretty.
Oh, really? Wow. That actually weighs quite a bit.
It does.
You have to drop a few pairs of underwear.
Exactly.
So
the sacrifice.
Yeah, the sacrifice a few things to carry that book around, but it's probably really useful. I know there's a few stories that I've gotten out of that book that I was just fascinated by. I think one was her chickweed. No, not chickweed. It was the plantain story about using plantain for somebody she was hiking with to help reverse blood poisoning.
Yes.
And I can't remember if that's in the larger book or in the smaller field guide, but the story is she and a friend went hiking, and the friend had gotten an injury, and they could see the blood poisoning moving up her arm. And they found some wild plantain and chewed it up and put it on her arm, and it was able to pull the toxins out.
Yeah, that's plantain's one of my favorite wild plants or wild weeds to talk about because it is such a powerful healer. Another friend told me a story about she had gone fishing and was a mile from the road and got a fishing hook in her arm and could start seeing the blood poisoning going up, and used plantain as well, and it just drew it back out. And when she went to the emergency room, they were like, oh, get that dirty plant material off of there. And once they took it off, the blood poisoning started coming back.
Uh-huh. So did they scrape it out of the garbage and put it back?
They asked her, what was in that?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Now, we don't have plantain here today, it doesn't look
we
like.
We don't,
can,
no.
Can you describe for people what that looks like? Because a lot of people, when I say plantain, they're thinking the thing that looks sort of like a banana from South America. Because if you don't know what plantain is, and if you've never seen it, it's all over in the summer. But what does it look like?
It is. So it has basal leaves, so it all grows around the ground in like a little whorl kind of. And then it'll get a spike coming up the middle that will have the seeds on it. And the leaves, you can tell that they're plantain if you pull it. Well, for one, they have linear veins. And if you pull it apart, it's kind of like a white string that you can see in there.
Great.
So if you see that, then you know you have plantain.
You know you have it. And it really does grow everywhere. So you can. It's probably growing in your yard.
And
if it's not growing right now, it will be in about a week.
I think it's called like white man's foot too or something, uh-huh, because it's followed a lot where people have gone and settled down. So,
any other uses for plantain? But I know it is blood poisoning for that, but it's also helpful for like nettle stings and stuff. Although,
it'll take the sting out of bee stings, nettle stings, mosquito bites. It'll help with those. And you just take the leaf, chew up a little bit in your mouth, and then put that. That spit it out onto the wound.
Yep, completely sanitary according to Western medicine standards.
Yeah. I think that your saliva actually, I've read, helps.
Activates
as well.
It, I'm sure. Yeah. I know, like, you know, people who are worried about it, I tell them just to chop it up, but I'm sure that chewing it up probably makes it more, does more of what it knows how to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you can also eat it when it's younger, put it in your salads. As it gets older, it tends to get tougher and just isn't as palatable. You could still eat it. And I've read that if you take the strings out from the veins, that it's more palatable that way. But
great.
But yeah. Okay. And then the seeds as well. I actually just read today in a lot of gluten-free baking, you use, is it psyllium husk?
It might be psyllium husk. There's something else made from a bacteria that I'm blanking on right now. But also
but
flax.
Plantain seeds are psyllium husk, and they expand a lot in water.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
But you can use the seeds as, you can grind them into a flour. They're really tedious to collect. But
yeah. So they're kind of like mucilaginous too?
They are, yeah. I have them in a jar. Uh-huh. I collected some and I have them in a jar, and you can like move it around and see them. It's really crazy.
Jello.
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of like chia seeds in a way, but
and those,
smaller.
As a tea will have a laxative effect.
Uh-huh.
So if
Great.
You're constipated.
Good to know.
It'd be good for you.
Okay, so we took a little side trip there. Let's go back to your story. So you grew up in a city.
Yeah, I grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and was never really, as I said before, much into plants. I was into celebrities and fashion, and which is hard to believe for people who know me now, because I've come a really long way, and I feel that part of that journey was getting outside. And by being outside and getting to know the plants, I feel like it's nourished me both physically, because wild plants are really nourishing, and then also spiritually. One of my favorite quotes is by Doug Tompkins, and he says, "Going out into the wilds of the world, you get into your soul a sense of beauty." And for me, that rings so true. And it's like, I feel like if I'm going out, and I'm going to be spending time in nature, and I can be collecting nutritious wild foods that connects me even more, then it's a win-win on so many levels.
Mm-hmm. There's something deeper going on there than fashion and celebrities.
Yeah.
And I just want to let everybody know that you're sitting here across from me wearing a gorgeous pair of what look like some kind of muddy-covered boots. So very fashionable for Alaska. It's Alaska fashion. But
exactly.
Yeah.
I like Alaskan fashion.
Yeah. So there's something when you stop just looking at the surfaces of things and you kind of go deep and find out more about what's actually out there. So it's a different – nourishes your soul in a different way than finding out what Britney Spears' latest move was.
Exactly. So – and I feel like a much happier and more fulfilled person having the interests that I do now. I feel like my life has more meaning.
And and you can share it with other people, because the whole point of this, right, is not just that you're going to offer these herbs to people, but the whole point of starting the apothecary is that you want to teach people how to do this for themselves. So you really want to empower people to go out there and find these plants and play with them.
That's the main thing. I want to, and that's a really good point, the empowerment. Going out and collecting your own food and collecting a medicine that you can use for everyday ailments is so empowering. And it just gives you such a sense of satisfaction. And I want to share that with people. And I mean, that, really, that's my biggest passion, is sharing the knowledge that I do have with other people who don't have it, because of the joy that it can bring. And seeing little kids figure out that, you know, oh, I can chew up plantain and put it on my mosquito bite and it'll stop itching and hurting, like, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and that's a really big thing, because there is a lot where we live in a culture that's driven by fear in a lot of ways, because fear gets us to consume. So when we're afraid and we think that we can't take care of things on our own and that we're sort of out there alone and we don't sort of have a backup, it can be very nerve-wracking. But if you realize that all you have to do is open your door and there's all of these things out there that are just waiting to help you out. I know my good friend Stella, who owns Holistic Midwifery in the Kozlowski Center, we've talked about herbs a lot, and I love what she calls the herbs that are right there, the back porch herbs.
Yes.
The ones that are just right there in your backyard, and it's the ones that are, those are the ones screaming at you, just eat me, do
like
something
dandelion.
With me. Yeah, because dandelion is one of my absolute favorites, because there's, you know, 40 different things you can do with dandelion,
yep.
Like plantain, but it's abundant, and it cracks me up that, you know, we treat those things as weeds and we try to eradicate them. Like, you know, I'm sure all the gardeners listening to me right now are thinking like, oh, here's the chickweed battle's about to start, but eat the chickweed.
Delicious.
Right.
So delicious.
Exactly. So
and it's a good skin soother as well.
Yeah, you can make salves out of it.
Yep.
So I think it changes your perspective. I know for me, I came from, I lived in Anchorage before I moved out here to the Valley. And even though, I mean, Anchorage is still, you know, pretty close to Alaska, but you know, I went on plenty of hikes, but I have, now that I've spent time with people like you and people like Stella, and, you know, just spent the past 8 years really like thinking about what are these things that are growing right outside. I have different eyes when I walk around. Like, I'm not just hiking on the path to get from, you know, okay, I'm going to get my 8 miles in to get to the top and then turn around. You know, like, I'm kind of meandering more, and I don't really care if I get to the destination. I'm like, oh, what? I wonder what that is. I wonder what you can use that for. So maybe I got to start carrying Janice's book around with me too. I've got the little guide, but the big guide is actually more fun.
So, yeah. No, it's funny that you mentioned that. I don't really hike very often. Mm-hmm. I go on hikes with my husband, and he ends up being really far away, and I'm like really close to the trailhead, like, oh, who's this? And oh, who's this? Looking at all the different plants, and he's like, Rachel, come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you start to give him personalities. That's One of Stella's teachers, Susan Weed, she's got a book. I can't remember what the it's just her introductory herbal book, and she there are 8 different herbs that are covered in there, and each one of them she gives them a voice and a personality.
Oh yeah.
So, and I love that. Like, once you start to get to know the herbs a little bit more, you see them as having little personalities. So they're little beings.
Oh, totally.
They're not just weeds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Each plant has their own essence to them, their own beingness. So, and it's fun getting to know them that way.
Yeah, and you're going to find different things that you can use them for than other people are going to find they can use them for.
Yeah.
The more you explore.
Yes, yeah. Definitely.
Okay, so let's talk about what is an apothecary exactly?
Yeah, that's a question I get a lot. It's not a word that's in general use these days. So an apothecary is where people used to go for their medicine. An apothecary did what pharmacists and pharmacies do today, only instead of dispensing medicine made in a laboratory, they dispense medicine made from the land. So that's one of the reasons I decided to name my business Alaska's Apothecary, because I want people going out and getting their medicine from the land, at least for general first aid purposes that any of us can do, cuts, scrapes, burns, anything of that sort. So, and I want to get that word back into general usage.
So, you know, I think we think about when we go on a hike, you know, carry that first aid pack with us.
Yeah.
So it's not that you don't need to still carry that first aid pack because there's still some good stuff in there. But again, your first aid kit is kind of all around you when you're out hiking in Alaska.
Correct. Right? Yeah. And I think it's a lot of fun to experiment when you have something that's not serious, to be like, oh, well, I'm going to try using this because I've read that it can work, and seeing how the different herbs do work. That's kind of how I've gained a lot of the knowledge that I have is I love it anytime my husband or I get hurt or sick. It's like, ooh, time to experiment and see what'll work and get those experiences.
Any particular first experiences that you remember from what you learned when you first went out there and didn't know anything?
Well, one actually more recently, I knew the use of it, but I was cutting up salmon and I filleted part of my pinky and it was bleeding pretty bad. And one of my favorite plants is yarrow, and yarrow is really good at stopping the blood flow. So I had to walk quite a ways because I didn't have any growing right by where I was, but I grabbed some and I did the poultice where you put the leaf in your mouth, chew it up, and then put it on there.
So it's the leaf, not the flower that you use.
You could probably use the flower too, but I used the leaves because that's all that was out at that time. And it stopped the bleeding for me really quickly. So, and it's also antibacterial, so it's got two things going for it.
So this is a reason why I'm thinking about one of the things that you're going to be offering through the apothecary is different herb walks. And it is helpful to have somebody who's experienced to teach you a little bit more about not only like what is the herb so you can identify it, but also what parts of the herb you would want to use.
Yeah, definitely. And by going out with somebody who knows what they're doing or who knows the plants will help you learn so much quicker. And I was lucky that my friend Kayla had already had experiences with the plants, and she knew who was who. And so I'd go out with her, and we'd taste plants together and talk about them. And having somebody who actually knew that this is plantain, or this is who it is, gives you that confidence of, okay, I can try this. Because otherwise, I found myself meeting a plant and being like, well, you look like, you know, let's say chiming bells, but is that really who you are? Could you possibly have a poisonous lookalike that I don't know about? And so you'll always be like second guessing yourself. So being able to go out with somebody and actually have them be like, here, you know, this is who this is. Crush it, smell it, taste it. Because when you engage those other senses, you're going to remember those plants so much better.
Yeah, I'm thinking of an experience I had this summer where I ate some berries. I was pretty sure they were cranberries on our property. And then, I looked at the book. I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure this is what it is. And I had a really weird sort of dizzy spell shortly after eating it. And there's only one poisonous berry in Alaska. Is it baneberry? Yeah. And so I quickly did my internet search and I'm like, oh, I hope this is, I was pretty sure it was what it was, and then, you know, I was pretty confident, and then it probably was completely unrelated, and maybe hadn't drank enough water or something, but just got very sort of dizzy and felt weird, so I immediately posted the picture of it on Facebook, and I had a bunch of people, including Lisa Stevenson of Lunatic Farms, get back to me and say, no, it's not, you didn't just eat baneberry, but yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing where I'm, you know, I was just getting experimental on my own and feeling a little bit sure of myself, and after the fact was like, oops, I should have just verified that. Like, I didn't, you know, I shouldn't have done that without knowing better. So that's how you learn.
Yeah, I've done that with some things, tried it, and then been like, should I have done that?
Yeah.
And then really, like, being in tune and like, okay, what's going on in my body? But yeah. Just to clarify really quick, there are more poisonous berries than just baneberry.
Okay.
But baneberry is the most poisonous berry. Just a small handful, a few of them can kill a small child. So, and those, it's also called China doll eyes because at the very tip there's a black dot that kind of makes it look like a doll's eye.
Mm-hmm.
But
oh, and could you actually, going back to yarrow, could you just, because we don't have any yarrow here today, so could you just give people an idea of what that looks like?
Yeah.
Because that's all over, too, in the summer.
It is, and it smells amazing. So it has darker green leaves. They're longer and skinnier and deeply serrated. So it kind of looks like a deeply serrated knife, which is a good way to remember that it's good for cuts. And the flowers are white. There's lots of little small ones, and it's on what looks like an umbel, but it's not, which is like an upside down umbrella, the Stokes from the umbrella. And if you crush one of the leaves, it's very aromatic. And I always recommend that people crush the leaves of plants and smell them, because you can learn a lot about the plants just from doing that.
So you get different when you smell it and you taste it and you just play with it in your hands, you're going to get all sorts of different sensory sensations. And then I think having done that with somebody experienced in front of you, then when you revisit that plant, those are going to be different ways to remind you of, like, oh, yes, this is the right plant, or no, this isn't. You know,
exactly.
It looks like that plant, but, gee, when I smell it, it's not the same thing.
One of my a good example of that would be water hemlock, which is one of the most poisonous plants, or the most poisonous plant in North America, and angelica. And they can resemble each other. And I don't recommend people harvest angelica unless they've met water hemlock, so that they can really, like, tell the difference. And one of the best ways for me to tell the difference, like, to be 100% sure for myself, is to smell it. Because water hemlock doesn't really have much of a smell, whereas angelica has a sweet, like, spicy scent to it. So kind of reminiscent of Devil's Club, I would say.
Yeah, so it's good to know lots of different ways to differentiate your plants, or even to know that there are lots of ways to differentiate your plants. I know, for instance, when you're talking about, you get an herb in some kind of a pill form, you really have no idea. Maybe you're getting a standardized amount of some ingredient that would be found in that herb. It's so far away from the actual herb. And so that's one of the reasons that you can actually cause harm to yourself. But when you're when you actually get to know the whole plant, and you get to know the whole herb, and you're getting all of these different amazing components in the herb, and that all creates a particular, I guess, gestalt of
yeah.
the herb that, like, has you know that this is the herb that you're getting. But when you get something in a powdered form in a pill, it's hard to know that you're actually getting the real thing. So
yeah.
the true test of whether or not this is a real thing is to actually have the herb in front of you and go, is this it or isn't it? It's much harder when you have a powdered version of something.
And it creates a connection, too. I mean, just taking a powdered herb in pill form, I mean, I feel like if I haven't met the plant, if I don't know the plant, for some reason I feel like it's not going to work as well on me.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like plants that you know can work a lot stronger with your body if you know them. So,
because they're your friends.
Exactly.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So that brings me to one of my favorite analogies is likening plants to your friends. So we all have our best friends, our friends that we know really well. We know the ins and outs of their lives. We probably talk to them on a daily basis or close to. And they're just always there for us. And then we have our good friends that, you know, we know their husbands and their children. We know where they work, we know what their hobbies are, and we know bits about them, but we probably don't talk to them every day. And then there are acquaintances, people you see in town, you know their names. Maybe you know a little more about them, but you just see them around town once in a while. And then there are people that you don't recognize at all. Plants are exactly like that. It's easy to get overwhelmed and feel like, I need to know everything about all the plants that grow here. Even I feel that way sometimes. But it's important to remember that plants are like your friends. There are going to be those few that you're really drawn to, that you really connect with, and that you get to know really well. And then there are going to be the plants that you know fairly well, and you'll use them, you know, here and there. And then there are the plants that, you know, you might know their name, you might recognize them, maybe know one of their uses, but don't usually use them. And then there'll always be those plants that you meet and you're like, oh my gosh, who are you? Why did I never notice you before? So
yeah, I always like the line that it's better to have one plant that you know 40 uses for than 40 different plants for 40 different uses.
Yeah.
So, and just to have, you know, one or two plants that are really sort of they're like your worker bees for you. I mean, they can do everything for you. And back to dandelion, and that's one of my favorite ones that I also learned about from Stella. I mean, there's so many things that you can do. And then I want to get into this about knowing the different parts of the plant, because one of the things that I learned about dandelion was that, well, if you harvest it in the spring, the roots are more of a diuretic. But if you harvest it in the fall, the roots are more of a blood sugar regulator. Those are just one thing that I know about, you know. And then,
wow.
And then, you know, that you want to eat the parts of the plant that are there. So in the spring, you would eat the roots before the leaves come up. And then in the once the leaves come up, you know, those are a good liver tonic. And then once the flower comes out, that it's actually a heart tonic, which, yeah, I mean, all those things, I had no idea. You know, I just thought those were just weeds.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so that with that one plant, look at all, and that's just the five things that I know. I mean, I know there's 500 different things that you can do with it. I keep hearing, when I ask people about dandelions, you know, people who've been using them, I always get a different story. I've heard people use the sap from the dandelion to get rid of warts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard of that.
Yeah. And then I know the common name for dandelion translates as piss in bed.
Correct.
So it's good.
Wet
yeah.
the bed.
Yeah. So it actually helps with urinary tract infections.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of different things that you can do with it.
Yeah. And so one of the things when I first was starting out as well, you read in the books, like, for this plant, harvest the leaves before it goes into flower, or harvest the root in the fall or the spring. And so I think understanding plant energies is really important. And it will give you a good overview of when usually to harvest which part of the plants. So in the wintertime, the plants are storing all their sugars and starches in the roots. So in the fall, when everything dies off, and in the spring before stuff comes up, all that energy is in the root. And so that's when you want to be harvesting the root. And then in the spring, it starts shooting that energy up into the leaves. And so the leaves are prime then, and that's when you'll harvest the leaves. And then once it starts flowering, it's going to pull that energy from the leaves and send it to the flowers. And so then the leaves usually get bitter. And some plants get more bitter than others. If you know it's safe, try it and just see if it fits your palate or not. And then you want to pick flowers when they're flowering. And then seeds, once the seeds come, and then once those die back. And usually if you're harvesting the whole herb, you'll harvest it when it's in flower. But just understanding the way plant energies work and why you harvest it certain parts at certain times
of the
year.
Thanks for defining that, because when you say plant energy, it starts to sound a little bit like woo-woo and out there. But what you're really saying is just where the plant is, like where the focus is right now, like where the work's getting done, where all the juice is in the plant.
Exactly.
So like where the substance is and where you can most use it. So it's not that the leaf's going to be bad for you when the flower's out, but that's not where the focus of the plant is. The focus is on the flower. So the,
exactly.
So the leaf's going to be just not as, you're not going to get as much out of the leaf or as much out of the root as if you harvest it during the time that the plant was really focusing on that part.
Yep.
Yeah.
And there are always exceptions to the rules, but knowing the main rule is always a good thing.
Yeah. So. I'm thinking about horsetail. I know that's one that you're supposed to harvest early. And then at a certain point it gets to be, I don't know what the change exactly is on that. We've got some horsetail.
Yeah. So, horsetail right now coming up, you can't really see the leaves that it has, but it'll start to come up and the leaves are
pointing up.
Spires,
right? Yeah.
Are pointing up. And once they start pointing down, they say that you shouldn't use them because the silica crystals get so large that
it affects the kidneys, right?
Yeah, they can cause kidney irritation. And because the silica crystals are bigger, then that's when it's good to use as a pot scrubber.
Ah,
so if you're
okay.
out camping, grab.
Mm-hmm. So
if you
run into a bunch of horsetail that's pointing down, then that's your scrub brush for your pot with all of your burnt stuff in it.
Exactly.
That's great.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep.
Any other things like that that are good for some of the local plants that you can point out where there's some really obvious change that happens?
Nettles, they say the same thing, that once it goes to flower that you shouldn't harvest it for eating. But so long as you're picking off the new leaf growth, then it'll keep regenerating and you can use the same patch all throughout the summer.
So let's talk about you've got some general harvesting guidelines on here. So let's talk about those.
So I know that there were certain things that confused me when I first started working with plants. Things like use the inner bark. And it's like, okay, well, what is inner bark? I know there's bark and I know there's heartwood, but what is inner bark? And one of the reasons I'm doing the walks is to show people, like, clear up those, help them with the learning curve of what parts are they even talking about on this. For harvesting guidelines, proper identification is probably the most important thing because you don't want to poison yourself or anybody else. I know there's been a lot of cases in Washington and Oregon area of people serving water hemlock on sandwiches or, oh. Yeah. So proper plant identification, know for sure what it is that you're harvesting. Typically, you don't gather from areas along roadsides, areas that have been sprayed, non-organic, anywhere near non-organic agricultural areas, just because you really want to get the cleanest plant materials
so
that you can.
I got a question about that, because I know a lot of plants, they're part of a continuum of a cycle of renewing the soil when the soil's been damaged. So, like, a lot of times you see fireweed along the sides of the road because the fireweed is actually repairing damage that's been done to the soil. So my question is, like, so is that something that you would personally harvest, or would you leave it alone? Or
along the roadsides, mm-hmm. I won't. But you'll also see fireweed in areas where there's just been a fire mm-hmm. or disturbed soils, but not all disturbed soils mm-hmm. are going to be contaminated. Mm-hmm. So the couple of fireweed shoots that I just found in the forest or in the yard of the place that I'm renting, which is not sprayed. So I know it's safe to eat them. You can eat them mm-hmm. if they're along the roadside. I just wouldn't make a habit of it mm-hmm. because
I just think about all the different, you know, cars and
yeah.
So you got a lot of exhaust, and then you've got the potential for dog excrement.
Wash your plants.
Yeah.
Wash before eating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely. And so fireweed makes me think of try different plants in different areas, because fireweed that I find around here, I usually really like. It's really tasty, the fireweed shoots. Whereas in Hatcher Pass, the ones I've tried up there are really bitter usually. So different soils, different growing conditions are going to affect the way different plants taste. So always keep that in mind. And if you try one plant somewhere and are like, ugh, like try it somewhere else. Maybe mm-hmm. you'll like it a lot better.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, that of course must make a difference what it's growing in. I know that there's some dandelions growing on some property that I have across from Colony Middle School. And they don't look like regular, I think they're regular dandelions, but the flowers are really bitter. And so they just have a different look to them versus dandelions that I've seen other places where the flowers are almost sweet. You know, yeah. They have a completely different flavor to them. You know, so it's like the ones that I found on that property, I think it's like a sandier kind of consistency to the soil. So we're going to take a break here, and we will be right back. We're talking to Rachel Bobka from Alaska's Apothecary, and we'll be right back with Bridge to Everywhere.
Listening to Radio Free Palmer, KVRF 89.5 on your FM dial, Big Cabbage Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Bridge to Everywhere, and tonight we're interviewing Rachel Bobka from Alaska's Apothecary, and we are just talking about safe harvesting practices for if you want to be harvesting wild herbs, wild plants in Alaska. So let's pick it up from where we left off.
Yep. So next, let's talk about how much to harvest. And for that, you've got to get to know the plant that you're harvesting. And some good questions to ask yourself is it prolific? Is it like dandelion and it grows everywhere? Or have you only seen a couple of them, like Angelica by where I'm living now? I don't see it everywhere.
And that is an issue in parts of the country where wild herbs have been over-harvested. I'm thinking, is it false unicorn root is one I think I've heard of. There's a few things I've heard here and there that people have been so enthralled with that they're basically, you know, making it go extinct in the wild.
Exactly. Yeah. And that always worries me with some of the plants that are slower growing, especially that have some really amazing medicinal uses. And you start to wonder, do I even tell somebody about this plant? Or even though right now some of those plants are more abundant up here, it can quickly go the other way if everybody's harvesting them and not using proper harvesting techniques.
Right.
So, and you want to keep the plant community strong. So, and by getting to know the plants, you can get to know how to harvest them to best keep them strong. And so a good example is chocolate lily, which is also called rice root. And so in the fall, after the foliage has died down, you can pull the root, and it's like a bulb of a lot of little bulbets that are like rice. And you can cook them just like you would rice. And if you went and you just picked up that whole bulb and left, and you did that with all the chocolate lilies in the area, they would all be gone.
No more chocolate lilies.
Exactly. Yeah. And all it takes is breaking off a few of those bulbets and putting them in the hole that you just pulled it out of and closing it down, and you'll have them again next year. Mm-hmm. And sprinkling a few more around so that they're even more abundant if you really like them. So just learning the plants and how you can best be their friends and make them be a strong community.
Right. So we're getting into the issue of sustainability right now. And so just taking that extra, how much more time does it take to put a little bit of it back in the hole and maybe a little bit longer to spread some more around? And then you've just perpetuated this plant that you really, that you like, and somebody else is going to enjoy it later on down the line.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so we tend to not think that way, I think, about clear cutting a forest. You know, let's just chop everything down. So, but it doesn't, you know, in this case, it doesn't take that much more effort to make sure that's going to be around for somebody else to enjoy.
Yeah, exactly. So learning the different plants and how best to harvest them to make them grow stronger. And it's a continual learning process. So, and the more time you spend with the plants, the more you'll just know, you'll just realize. Every year I have epiphanies about, oh, I understand now. So, never take more than you can process, or try not to. A good rule of thumb is that it's going to take twice as long to process as it does to harvest. And it's never fun having moldy wild plants that you really wanted to use but just didn't have time to properly process. And one of my cardinal rules is to never throw wild plants into the trash can. They always go back out into the forest or the compost pile. And to me, that's showing your respect for the plant.
So return it to the earth.
Exactly. Which brings me to the next thing of always thanking the plant. I always ask permission. Just think to the plant, like, is it okay if I harvest you? And I follow my intuition. And by looking around, seeing, like, is this plant prolific? Is it actually okay if I harvest this? Or is it going to be a detriment to that particular species? And then if I do feel it's okay to harvest it, then offering some sort of thanks, whether it's just saying thank you, or some people do a prayer, some people give tobacco or rice. I a lot of times will pull just a little hair from the nape of my neck and put it down, because to me that makes me feel the connection of being pulled from the earth. I think it's the same sort of feeling. So just come up with your own way of showing your appreciation for the gift of nutrition and well-being that the plant is giving you.
Sounds like it can be a little bit of a meditation. Yeah,
definitely. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really important part of the process. I think you get way more out of it if you are having that connection with them. So, and most importantly, enjoy yourself. I know I feel like I am in my element when I'm out harvesting plants. I feel just this joy and this excitement, and I feel like I'm where I belong. And so being happy and just enjoying your time while you're out there, I think, is also really high up there in importance.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the difference of walking into the supermarket and buying something that's been wrapped in plastic and shipped across the country using petrochemicals and who knows what was poured on it by the time it got to you, and how little life it has versus, you know, going out into the backyard or into the backcountry and just spending some time and harvesting things and turning them into something nutritious, with the whole the different experience of that.
Yep.
And we've been removed from that, so this is a great opportunity to go back to those roots.
Which is another reason why I really want to get more people out there harvesting the wild foods. Our nutrition has really, I feel, has really gone down in this country. We don't eat whole foods. We eat a lot. People eat a lot of processed foods and quick and easy foods that aren't nourishing our bodies and making us as happy and healthy as we can be and as vibrant. So,
and we don't often use the whole food anymore. We were talking before the broadcast about, I just came back from Korea, and I went to this restaurant where all they serve in the restaurant is chicken soup in a pot. And everybody knows there's a line out the door, and people come in, and it's this rich, nourishing bone broth, and it's this very, it's a small chicken, it's a whole chicken that they've stuffed with rice and ginseng and dates. And I don't know, there's a few other things in there, and then it's in this like amazingly rich broth soup, and it's served with that and kimchi, and you walk away from eating this big bowl of chicken soup and kimchi, and it's like a whole meal, and you feel full, and you feel like vibrant and ready to. There's like a it's you know, for a bowl of chicken soup. I mean, I grew up Jewish, so I think of chicken soup as being medicinal anyway, but this was the real deal. Like, I have not had a bowl of medicinal chicken soup that ever stood up to what I ate last week in this place. It was amazing.
I wish I could have been there.
Yeah.
I love chicken soup.
But it's like it was an experience of eating that I don't often have in this country anymore. Like, I have, you know, I cook at home a lot, but still, even the raw materials that I'm working with, if they come from the supermarket, if they don't come from, I mean, this time of year, we're about to get more local produce, but it's such a different experience when you go out and you harvest something wild, or you harvest something from your own garden and you use it. That approaches it.
I completely agree. Hippocrates saying, "Let your food be thy medicine," is so true, and I think we need to really bring that back as well. So, and bone broths and fermented foods are a huge part of that.
Yeah, and we've talked about those on the show in the past. So if we have time, we'll go back there. But I do want to talk about some of the different plant preparations that you're using.
Yeah.
Once you harvest the herbs, and what do you do with them?
So one of the easiest things you can do is drying or dehydrating them. And this is what I try and do with as many nettles as I possibly can, so that I can have a nice nourishing tea all throughout the winter. A concept with drying that I didn't really get until like last year was, when the plant material is dried, you don't want it to look any different from when it was fresh. It shouldn't be losing its color. If you end up with a pale looking herb, then it was not dried properly. You don't want to dry in the sun. You want to dry in the shade, where it's warm. So like by a wood stove that's not totally cranking is a really great place, or if you have a small heater or something. Or a lot of times I would just hang them in our cabin that was never super warm, but and they would dry really well. So
you're hanging them up, you're not spreading them out in a sheet on the floor or something like that?
A little bit of both. Plants tend to start to take over my whole place in the summertime. But with herbs like yarrow, when you're picking the whole plant, I'll usually tie those in bundles and hang them up where I can so that they're out of the way. But plants like nettle, I'm actually in the process of building some nice actual herb racks so that I have a place for all of my plants. But otherwise, you can, I've taken smaller cardboard boxes, cut slits in the side, and just stuffed a bunch of plant material in there, and then just make sure that you're turning it so that it's all getting airflow. And or you can spread it all out if you have the room to do that somewhere.
Yeah, so. I'm a little bit intimidated by the drying process, I have to say. And so at one point I expressed to a friend that I was interested in her chickweed in her garden because I couldn't get chickweed to grow in the place that where which everybody like, it's because I didn't have a garden. As soon as you have a garden, you get chickweed. And so she showed up with two bags, garbage bags full of chickweed. Wow. And then figuring out how to dry the two garbage bags full of chickweed, I had sheets in the garage and I spread them out, you know, on those sheets. But, you know, I was like, is this,
that's,
you know,
a lot of plant material it was a to lot dry of, at once yeah. without being prepared. Like,
right.
I wouldn't have been able to yeah. handle that much at the place where
I didn't,
living.
You know, I ended up probably, you know, having to probably like, you know, 3/4 of it I probably went into the compost,
yeah.
but I got like 1/4 of it that I was able to dry really well, and then a portion of that turned a little bit yellow, so I know I didn't do it right. You know, I totally didn't know what I was doing. So
I guess that's a good thing to think about when you're harvesting as well, like how much room do you actually have for whatever type of preparation you're going to be making. Mm-hmm. So if you're drying it, do you have enough room to dry as much plant material as you're gathering?
Right. That's the part really for me that it seems like, you know, we don't have a huge house, and so where do you put – and then we have pets. So,
yeah.
you know, if you've got cats walking around on the floor, you're not going to want the herbs
yeah.
sitting on the floor where the cats can get into it and think that it's a litter box or whatever they want to do.
And one of my favorite ways to preserve herbs, it's either drying or tincturing. And I love tincturing just because it will preserve the plant in its prime for the longest period of time. Tinctures can last anywhere from, some people say 2 to 3 years, some of them like 40 years.
So in tincturing, you're talking about a vinegar or alcohol tincture?
Typically alcohol, but vinegar will also mm-hmm. work. They're different. They're called menstruums mm-hmm. that you can use. So typically vodka or Everclear, brandy, vinegar, glycerin if you can't have alcohol. And don't like the taste of vinegar, mm-hmm. but those are always...
My understanding with the tinctures is that you're extracting more of the medicinal aspects of the plant as opposed to the nutritional aspects. Is that correct? I mean, I know that's a huge generalization.
Yeah, you're going to be extracting different components of the plant if you're using an alcohol or a water.
Mm-hmm.
And some people I know will do a mixture of the two. But I'm not exactly sure how that works.
Okay. So. And then you have a note here about talking about teas versus infusions versus decoctions.
Yeah. So there are all these things that were so confusing to start with. And so just understanding some of the basics. So a tea, making a tea or an infusion is, to me, pretty much the same thing. Just tea is usually what people call it when you go out to a place where you get tea.
Mm-hmm.
But you're infusing those herbs into water. And so a tea and an infusion is you boil water and you pour that over the plant material and you let that steep. Whereas a decoction, you are putting the plant material in cold water, putting it on the stove, bringing it to a boil, and then simmering it for 5 to 20 minutes. And you'll typically do decoctions with the hardier parts of the plants, so roots that are not high in volatile oils and seeds. And then you'll be doing infusions or teas, which you can infuse herbs anywhere from 5 minutes to 12 hours.
Mm-hmm. I think of the distinction. I think Susan Weed makes this distinction that a tea versus a, and this maybe just be her distinction, but a tea versus a infusion in her mind is like a tea is sort of flavored water. You know, like it's a much lighter infusion versus
okay.
doing like a cup of herb to a quart of water. You know, then you're more in infusion land, and that may just be her distinction.
I like
but
that
that's
distinction.
A, yeah, I mean that helps me. I think when I'm giving somebody tea, I'm giving somebody like a really they're getting the flavor, but they're probably not getting and maybe a little bit of nutrition, but they're maybe not getting a lot of medicinal, I mean, mildly medicinal qualities. But then when you give somebody an infusion, you're giving them like a ton of minerals. Yeah, it's like
tea.
Really nutritious. Like, you know, it's eating like a head of broccoli is what you're giving them. So,
I like that
yeah.
distinction
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah, that helps. I think Stella probably mentioned that one. That's probably where I know it because she studied with Susan Weed. So that's how I make the distinction between the two.
Yes, and Stella is an amazing resource. She's I'm not an herbalist, and she is, and she has a wealth of information if you're really looking into the medicinal stuff. I know a lot of the basics, the first aid stuff, and a few other things, but I'm working towards
getting
more of that knowledge. So,
okay, and then you also have a note here about infused oils versus expelled oils, salves, balms, and ointments, and elixirs and syrups.
Yeah, so I see some people, one thing is, so there's rosehip seed oil, which is a really good light oil that they extract from rosehip seeds. And I've seen people say, oh, I've made my own rosehip seed oil. But what they're actually doing is infusing another oil with rosehip seeds. So understanding the difference between when an expelled oil and then an infused oil is.
And so one is you're taking the oil out of the plant.
Correct.
And, and so basically you're pressing it and getting a substance out versus the other one where you're putting the plant substance in the oil and that the oil is then pulling stuff out of the plant.
Correct. Yeah.
Great.
And infusing plant material and oils is another really good way to preserve them and to use for medicinal preparations. And then by heating it up in a double boiler and adding beeswax, you can make salves, balms, and ointments. And using different amounts of beeswax can help you have a thicker or looser salve or ointment to be using. And I love making my own ointments to put on scrapes and stuff that I have instead of using conventional Neosporin. You can make your own Neosporin.
That's
and
great.
I think that's amazing.
Yeah, I love that.
So, yeah.
Yep, don't have to buy Neosporin because that's got petroleum in it anyway, probably.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then you can make syrups, which a lot of people do here already, and elixirs, which is using honey in the preparations to make like cough syrups and other things like that.
Okay, and you have a list here of nutritional spring greens.
Yeah.
So can you tell us about some of those that are about to be coming up?
Yeah.
And you've brought some of those with you. And I took a picture of it, and I'll put it up on our Facebook page for the rebroadcast so people can take a look at what we're talking about.
We'll go over the ones that I brought here, which are ones that I found over on Lazy Mountain where I'm living. Nettles are coming up. I've found some as tall as 6 inches. They survived the snow that we had.
Wow.
And they're really great. They have little hairs on them that have formic acid in them. So that's why it's called stinging nettle. If you rub up against it, it'll give you a little sting. A lot of people will recommend you pick them with gloves. Unless I'm harvesting a whole lot of them, I usually don't wear gloves because I feel getting that sting kind of helps connect me and helps bring circulation to my hands.
It's good for arthritis probably too, like bee stings.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. So not that I have arthritis. Uh-huh.
Well, you won't get it.
Exactly.
This is preventative medicine too, right?
Yeah. And nettles are really good sautéed or steamed. You can add them to soups or stews or anything where they're cooked because the cooking will get rid of the formic acid. And if you dry them completely, that also will, so they won't sting you. They are definitely one of my favorite spring greens, incredibly nutritious. So, and then we have Mertensia or chiming bells, also called bluebells. They have the little tiny blue flowers later in the season.
Which you can eat.
And
they're
are
good
delicious.
In salads.
Yeah. If you've never eaten flowers, they have almost all of them have a slightly sweet taste to them.
Yep.
And they add color and excitement to your salads and dishes. I highly recommend them.
Yeah. For some reason, those make me think of cucumbers. When
really?
I eat them, yeah, there's like something reminiscent of cucumber to that flavor for the bluebells. I don't know, but I love the way they look in salads. They're just beautiful.
I'll have to think about that next time. So the leaves are coming up right now, and they're slightly hairy. The older they get, the larger the hairs get, and they start to knot. You can eat them now at this stage, and they're pretty. They also have kind of that sweetest.
Swedish?
Taste to
Sweetish,
it.
That's
a strange word. And so those are really good. You can put them in salads. I prefer cooking them just because sometimes the hairiness just doesn't go with my throat very well.
And it looks like you've got some, what's that?
So this, I call them cucumber shoots now. And then when they get older, watermelon berry.
Uh-huh.
The shoots are reminiscent of cucumber. Mm-hmm. Have you tried them?
I have not. Okay, try it. Try it.
Yeah. And so if you look in Janice Schofield's book, you can see what they look like.
So I'm smelling it first. And it's got kind of a, that, like a sweet almost.
Like smells green.
It. Yeah.
It's very tasty.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah. It's one of my favorites to add to salads because cucumbers are hard to grow up here. And mm-hmm. so having that taste this early in the season.
Who needs a cucumber?
And they seem, yeah. And they're fairly substantial. Mm-hmm. And you can grow, you can pick them until the leaves start like really coming out. Mm-hmm. So they can get fairly tall. And those are definitely, although I say about every plant that this is one of my favorite plants mm-hmm. because they all are. And then we have fireweed shoots, which I found some that were like 6 inches and leaves were starting to open up. But when they're tight like this, you can pick the whole shoot and eat them. As they get taller and the leaves actually start coming out, the stem becomes a lot more mucilaginous and isn't as appetizing. But then you can pick the leaves and have the leaves in salads or whatever. And then once it flowers, you can eat the flowers as well. And also when they're bigger, you can open up the stem and run your teeth along the inside. And it's a good, slightly sweet snack that's mm-hmm. Thirst quenching as well.
Yep. Good to know when you're hunting or hiking and run out of water.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And then I actually found some fiddleheads, which it seemed kind of early, but I was excited to see them.
Well, is it? I think of them as being sort of out in Hatcher Pass, I guess, in the end of
everywhere
in
end
May.
Pass.
So that it's, so it's just that we it feels like it's early because we just had snow last
exactly.
week.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's what
yeah.
it is. And ostrich fern is actually one of my favorite ones to gather because it won't have all the flaky stuff that you see on most of the ferns, mm-hmm. which you really want to take off. But you can pick ferns until they start uncurling. So you can pick them when they're like 8 inches tall, and that's one of my favorite times to pick them. You can saute them like asparagus.
So as long as the head's curled, it's fine.
Correct.
When what happens after it unfurls?
It's untasty, mm-hmm. unappetizing, like the leafiness. And there's something else that happens with mm-hmm. them.
There is some chemical in there that
yeah,
you don't really want to eat.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, but as long as, so it doesn't matter how tall it is, as long as the head's curved
correct.
Around, you're good.
Yep. And sauteing them is the preferred method. You're supposed to cook them because otherwise it has a B vitamin depleting mm-hmm. substance okay. in it that I can't remember the name of. So
good to know.
Yeah. And then
last one, I think there, yeah,
we've got dandelion, which it's one of the first greens to start coming up. But you can eat the leaves. I can tell you the first time I ate dandelion, I did not like it. But I kept trying it and I think it was just the location it was growing in. It was super bitter, but man, it's one of my favorite greens in salads or anything.
Great. So we're actually coming down to the last minute of the show, which
oh
really
gosh.
Went fast. So I just want to really quickly let everybody know where to go for your website to learn about the different offerings that you have. And please check out our website and Rachel's Facebook page as well to learn more. But go ahead and tell everyone where they can go to learn more.
Yeah.
What's coming up next.
So it's www.akapothecary.com. So that's akapothecary.com. And a Facebook page, just look up Alaska's Apothecary or facebook.com/akapothecary.
And Rachel does have some pretty exciting things coming up in the future. I know she's trying to go 100% local in the next 3 years, so we'll be looking forward to that, and we'll have you back on the show. Thank you very much for joining us, Rachel Bobka from Alaska's Apothecary, and have a great evening, everyone. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for joining us on The Bridge to Everywhere, broadcasting on KVRF 89.5 Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. Like us on Facebook at Bridge to Everywhere to access more information, links, and resources from our guests and show topics.